1, 2, 3, this is Dr. Alex Avila, and this is Love University, and we're back. I'm an author, psychologist, and speaker, and every week we talk about how to love yourself, others, and higher nature, how to improve your life, your relationships, career, finances, personal, spirituality, and emotional health. And we've been having some great guests now that we're in the summer session. We're swinging really nice in there. And today's topic is going to be something very powerful, and I think we'll connect with a lot of people. And it is a topic beyond grief, washing away the tears with rays of hope. Our guest today is Steve Sewell, who's a grief educator and author. He graduated from Biola University. Steve has over 25 years of leadership, counseling, and teaching in churches, hospices, as a bereavement specialist and chaplain leader. He's a national speaker and author. He's written books such as At a Loss and Finding Hope, dealing with grief and recovery. Welcome, Steve, to the show.
Thank you so much. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, I'm really happy to have you today, but we're going to talk about a topic that can be a little bit somber and maybe sad for some people. The idea of grief, which is deep sadness and yearning when someone or something you love is taken away. And that could be in death, a spouse, parent, or child, or friend. And we know that there are stress hormones that are released when people are under severe stress that can affect your immune system. Now, Steve, you wrote a couple of books. One is At a Loss. I think it's about stories that deal with coping with the loss of a child and other challenges. And also Finding Hope. You said you lost your smile when your grandma died, but hope can bring it back. So, Steve, yeah. I want to say something, something. Now, this is a study of a young man who was playing with a gun in front of his girlfriend, trying to impress her, I guess because of a rap song. He put it to his head, and he thought it wouldn't fire, but it did, and he died. The poor young man died. What can you tell the parents as to why this happened?
You know, grief is such a mysterious, confusing area of our life that we always run from it. And so there's often the questions that we run through our mind and through our relationships, such as, you know, as you suggested, why did this happen? Why is this going on? I raised my child to be a better thinker or a better decision maker. Why all of this? And I think there's a lot that we can say in it. But I think the fact that things like this are such unexpected, they're such uncontrollable, and they're unimaginable, and they're unprecedented, and it almost leaves us to a place of being uncertain. And we're asking these questions at all times, especially at a time of loss. One of the things that I will always say when things like this happen is we might not ever know what is the things that we're learning about this. What are the things that we can grow in this? One of the things that I have come to realize more and more is that I'm not a fixer of people. I don't want to fix people. I want to help bring them to a reconciliation of what's happening.
So when these parents suffer this news, which is terrible, losing a child, they say is one of the worst, do you give them a hug? Do you pray for them? Do you give them advice? What do you do as a grief counselor? What is it that you help them with?
You know, when someone comes to me and talks to me about their loved one or the change that's gone on in their life. Because we all know, right, that grief is so much more than just a death of a person or a pet, but it also includes moving and a friend group change, a job transition, a faith group challenges or transitions. And so oftentimes what I want to do is ask them questions about what they believe and be with them. Most of the time when we think about grief and we think about helping people, oftentimes what we do is we talk a lot. What I like to do is I like to just be with them. I might ask them questions and let them do a lot of talking and let them see where this might be going, which might be a long process. Some people say, you know, hey, can you meet with me for an hour so that I can get better? And my response oftentimes, I'd be happy to meet with you for as long as we can.
I see. Now, Steve, the idea of is there a worse death to deal with? You may have had some stories, maybe, and experiences you can tell us about. But for example, there's a sudden death, you know, a violent death or an accident, or, you know, the long-suffering person with terminal illness. And then you look at, you know, losing a child, a parent, or a spouse. Is there any of these that hit people more than others? Or are they equal? What's been your experience in terms of their grieving?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think, you know, oftentimes what people do, they like to ask that question because they want to know where they are in the spectrum. Yes. But the fact that grief is so uncontrollable, I always have said that whatever's going on is the biggest thing that's going on. And I want to help them. I often say, you know, well, you know, I lost my job. And my response is, wow, that's incredible. To lose your job is very powerful. And right then and there, it is. When people say, you know, when people will say, I want to get past this, and my response is, I want to help you get past it too. Yes. At the time, it's just as crazy as it can be.
I see what you're saying. So there's really no way to establish that there's one worse than the other. Is that true, Steve?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. There really isn't. It's really all about what's happening in your life. I just met with someone today. Their daughter is going through in and out of being hospitalized once a week for her breathing. They just cannot seem to get her asthma under control. This is the worst experience she's ever had. And I asked her about what other things that she's experienced. And she's experienced some other things that would captivate us. But to her right now, this is the hardest thing.
I see. Now, Steve, I know that you're a man of faith and you work a lot in the spiritual area. And this seems like a little bit like a downer, I mean, to deal with this every day with this sadness and loss. Why do you get into this? Did you go through a grieving process yourself, or what is it that brought you to this kind of work?
You know, it's a great question. And I'm always chuckling a little bit as how people, you know, come to their jobs and so forth. I have been pastoring for a long period of time, even though I'm not currently a pastor of congregation. But I can remember all the way back in junior high when people would come to me and they would cry on my shoulders because, you know, their best friend was a dirty dog to them, you know, or they didn't make the soccer team, or their math test wasn't as good as they wanted. And so I've always been caring for people. My dad told me when he was alive, he says, Steve, if you're not going to be a counselor, you might miss your mark.
Okay.
And so
you're a very loving person. You're a compassionate person, it sounds like.
I want to be. Yeah, right. Yes. I always want to be compassionate. That's why I started an organization, a nonprofit group called Encouraging Hope. I always want to encourage hope in people.
Yeah, I like that. Now, Steve, if you recall the famous author C.S. Lewis, wrote a book called In Grief Observed, where he talks about his wife of only 3 years of marriage died of cancer. And he waited most of his life to get married. He was a bachelor for a long time, and he was a famous author, as you know. Mm-hmm. And he said in the book, he says, is anything more certain than that in all the vast times and spaces, if I were allowed to search them, I should know where to find her face, her voice, her touch. She died. She is dead. Is the word so difficult to learn? And he also asked, can you ever return to normal? Is it possible, Steve, you lose someone close to you, a parent, a spouse, a child, a friend? Can you ever become normal again, or is it something you will carry the rest of your life?
You know, I always like to preface the word normal with a new normal. I don't know if we ever get back to who we were because people impact us. I think that's one of the reasons why we were created. That's my own personal viewpoint, my own worldview, that I was created to impact in people and to make a difference in people. So when my father died 6-7 years ago, I've never been the same. When my grandmother has died, I've never been the same. When my first dog passed away when I was a child, I realized that I had a thing. I had a curiosity. I had a wondering about dogs, and even so much to the point of, you know, I don't know if I really have come to the place where I really always want to have a dog, because I know that the dog is going to pass away soon.
I thought of that too, but I recently got a nice little dog, puppy.
And puppies are great, and dogs are fine, and people are wonderful.
Yes.
My wife has a t-shirt that says, I love my dogs, people not so much. and I think that's just part of who we are. But, you know, are we ever the same? No, we're not. And I think the reason is because we're so impacted by the circumstances. And I always tell people, can we find the legacy? Can we find the treasure? Can we find the miracle that might be in this circumstance so that we can become like the person, you know, that has passed away? I just recently had a bout with prostate cancer. I am a different person now entirely. And I told my doctor, I said, hey, I help people with cancer. I don't get cancer. And his response was, you're going to help people even more now.
Wow.
And that was profound to me. I've never been the same.
That's very powerful.
And I believe that's going to be the case for every person who goes through a big loss.
Exactly. Now, you know, C.S. Lewis also said in his book, and this is a nice idea, that his solution to grieving was to express gratitude for the gift of true love. Mm. Now, do you feel that that can help people, the idea that, you know, say you had a true love in some way and it was taken from you, and you have gratitude for that. Can that help people in healing?
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that we always talk about. It's hard to do that in the very beginning. So I'm always encouraging people to have a hope first. Hope looks so much different than gratitude. Hope allows us to see the good and the bad in a circumstance. It allows us to see the light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. When we get to that place, when we're able to be at that, you know, quote unquote, light at the end of the tunnel, we can look back and we can see how things have changed and we can have gratitude. It's very similar to the biblical story of the children of Israel crossing the big river. And when they all got to the point, the leader said, can we stop? Can we grab a rock and can we remember this rock by putting it on our mantles when we get to our families and when we all settle in and we become a part of a community? Can we look back and say, I remember when, and we can have some gratitude then? But it's hard to find it right in the beginning.
Yes, I can see that. And of course, Kubler-Ross talks about the stages of grieving. We've heard about the, you know, denial, anger, depression, and then acceptance. And actually, her co-author, David Kessler, recently wrote a new book, and he said the sixth stage is called meaning. And you may have heard of another author, Rabbi Kushner, who talked about why bad things happen to good people. And he talks about Job and other modern stories. And the thing he talks about is that when we have a tragedy or loss or suffering, it's not that it has meaning in it. We have to impose the meaning in it by asking the question, instead of asking, why did this happen to me? Ask, now that this has happened to me, what am I going to do about it? And that brings me to a real case study I had with a woman whose son was visiting from college. He went back east after several years, and she was very happy to have him come back. That same night, he went out with his cousin to celebrate, and he saw a girl he liked. He made a comment to her, but she took it the wrong way, and she felt insulted. She brought her family over, and they ended up kicking, stabbing, and killing the young man. And it was horrible for her, this woman's mother, who had not seen her child for several years. And I did therapy with her. And what we learned, I mean, through the grieving, through the crying and everything else, is that she loved children. So she ended up becoming a foster mother to give love to other children that didn't have parents. So in some way, that helped her heal. So she, in some ways, put her own meaning on it. What do you think of that as importance, Steve, in terms of recovering from grief?
You know, I think anytime you have a difficult experience, whether it's a friend group or a job loss or any kind of grief point or grief pivot in our life, I think it's always a good idea to discover the meaning behind it. I don't know if we can find it right away the way that we would like to see it happen. You know, most of us would like to discover the meaning and the what so that we can move on in our life. But moving on is such a dangerous word to use sometimes because, you know, people have different timelines. The thing that we have to remember that, you know, grief doesn't mind our business. Grief minds its own business. And so I think it's really important that while we're searching for meaning, we could ask the questions like you had suggested there with the Rabbi Kushner, and also with your own case study there. You know, the idea of what is this going to do in my life? How will this impact me? The first response is going to be very earth-shattering. It's going to be very challenging for that person or for that couple.
I see.
Or that for that organization.
Yes. And Steve, you mentioned the term grief pivot. I haven't heard that. What does that mean? Does that mean you go into grief or you go out of it?
You know, I think grief pivot has always meant when you think of when you get up from a chair and you pivot to move to the right or to the left, we can become so quick and just get going and get out of the chair and move right away. But if you've had cancer or if you've had a knee replacement, or if you've had any kind of sports injury, getting up out of a chair is a careful, calculated task. And it can become second nature once we get through it, but we have to learn how. So to me, when we're going through grief, we pivot. We are carefully selecting the things that we do. One of the things that we say as counselors all the time, I'm sure you've said this a lot, is when you're in a difficult situation and you're grieving, you're in a bereavement time, you're in a bereavement period, we don't make decisions quickly. I always encourage our folks that come see me is that, you know, let's not sell our house, let's not buy a car, let's not take a vacation and do so many quick things and spend a lot of money and do a lot of things because we're still learning how to pivot. I was telling someone the other day, they have made decision after decision after decision that have been unfortunately very poor.
Yes.
And so my suggestion was, you're not good at making decisions right now. Why don't we help put into place some helpful resources so that when you are ready to make some decisions, you can bounce some of those things off of those people so you pivot right. And I think that's what's helpful.
I like that, Steve. That's a very interesting way to look at it. Now, the other thing that's also very interesting is not everyone has the same reaction to loss or suffering. Now, we know that grief has an end period. It has a certain time period to it. But then we have something called complicated grief, which is when it lasts a long time and people become very irritated and obsessed almost with the departed person. And then we get into what's called depression, major depression, where people become hopeless, helpless, and even suicidal. And I've worked with victims of crime who have what we call PTSD because they actually witnessed perhaps someone being, you know, family member being shot or killed. So they have flashbacks and other reactions. So it seems like there are a lot of different ways people can react to grief. And they say one of the risk factors is if you have multiple losses at one time. For example, a loved one dies, you get sick, and maybe you lose your job. But the other main factor is that people that overthink the loss, they dwell on it so much, and they don't think about how they can get control of their life. What's been your experience in terms of that, Steve, in terms of why people develop certain disorders and not others?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you had just said how people will overthink things. And grief allows you, really makes you overthink. You know, if there's three things about grief that I've learned, it's normal, it's natural, and it's necessary. And so while we're doing all those things, we overthink everything. Will I ever get better? Will I ever be able to be intimate with my spouse?
By the way, I think
spouse?
There's a dog grieving there in the background. Is your dog mad at you?
Unfortunately, it's even with my door closed, it's I can hear my dog.
Wait a minute,
sorry.
See, I thought you said you didn't want to have any more dogs because they're going to die. How can we have a dog?
We have two.
Oh, okay. So you overcame your grief of death.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. But you know, I think what's challenging with grief is that it does create an overthinking process, or it will prevent an underthinking. I have a friend that when I was in the thick of things, especially when I was learning how to think about my own cancer, he told me when I thought that I could overcome this pretty quickly and I could get busy, get on in my life, you know, so to speak, he says, Steve, I want to remind you, you have cancer. And it's a quick way for me to remember, I can't underthink this. I have to really think about this. And I think you're right. Your people will adjust to their own timetables. Some people will run through it, rush through it, and it does become a delicate issue for other things to come up, such as, you know, depression. I always think of grief as a roller coaster involving wide variety of emotions, good, bad days, and ups and downs.
Okay, Steve. So, Steve, I want to ask you something. You mentioned that you have cancer. Are you in remission, or do you still have it?
I am cancer-free.
Oh, good. I'm happy to see that. That's wonderful.
It feels wonderful. Thank you very much.
That's a great thing. So I know, having gone through your own potential loss of health and life, I'm wondering about the Valley of Humor, because I made a little joke about your dog, and you laughed about it. So it sounds like you have a sense of humor. Is that important? Is that important to have a funny bone when you have serious things?
I think it's very important. I think gratitude and humor are two things that are often misunderstood about its role in healing. I don't think that we can be humorous, and I don't think we could be having the very beginning. But I think once we realize where we're at, once we begin to understand the the suffering value in these types of things, then we could find ourselves filled with gratitude. We can perhaps laugh at ourselves, laugh at the circumstances that might find ourselves in. One of the things that my children were careful with, but they laughed at me out of my cancer, and they came to visit me in the room.
So on the other hand, though, Steve, there's a little contradictory advice when it comes to comforting the grieving person. They said in ancient wisdom that singing songs to a heavy heart is like taking away a coat on a cold day. So how do you approach someone? Should you be lighthearted, or should you also be kind of sad when you're around a person who's grieving?
I think one of the best ways that we can be around people of grief is to read or to have a good assessment of where they're at. And most of the time, when people are grieving, what we need to do is just be with them.
Yes.
Just if they want to talk, then we're listening. If they want to ask questions, then we can have short answers. If they want to watch a movie, I'm about watching a movie. If they want to hear their dad's favorite song because their dad passed away, then I'm going to find it and I'm going to play it. So that's
like,
the kind
like,
of approach
it's like being
that I
present,
always take.
Being present, or also in psychology terms, is mirroring. Having empathy, you know, putting yourself in their shoes.
Exactly.
It's not easy for a lot of people don't have that ability, or maybe they haven't developed it. But
you're absolutely right. I think I want to speak to that for just a moment.
Yes.
There's chaplains across the country that are brand new at being a chaplain. They felt a call. They have a sense of assurance, a sense of confidence.
Right. What is a chaplain when you use that term? What does that mean?
So I always use the chaplain as a pastoral care person who's bringing empathy and pastoral care, understanding presence, and they're coming along with a more of an open faith type of approach to suffering and to life scenarios. A hospital chaplain is not supposed to be indoctrinating other people. They are supposed to come in, assess the situation, and how can they offer a spiritual guidance or a spiritual act of ritual tradition.
I see. So it's kind of a compassionate thing you guys are doing, you know, trying to relieve people's suffering. Now,
exactly.
The other thing, Steve, is we were talking a lot about death and dying, but there are also other kinds of grief, you know, losing a relationship, or even something like moving away from home for the first time, changing a job, retiring. And maybe like you're getting older, you're not as good looking as you used to be, or your health is not as good. So how about with those? Do you give different advice for people that are having, you know, maybe more subtle losses than just death?
You know, anytime suffering happens at any kind, whether we are young, old, coming out of something, going into something, it always calls our basic beliefs to be in question, such as suffering, control, confidence, perspective, hope. And then a big one that we've talked about earlier is meaning. So anytime that those things are called to question, it causes us to think about our life and to overthink or to underthink or to try to make sense of it all. So I'm always encouraging people, let's slow life down a little bit so that we can hear what suffering is telling us.
Hmm.
I call this learning a reasoning of suffering, or when I'm talking to faith groups, I ask them about what is their theology of suffering.
Now Steve, I'm going to ask you some things here. I want you to tell me if it's a myth or a truth about grieving. I'm going to give you a little quiz. Are you ready?
Okay.
Pain goes away faster if you ignore it. So, you know, in the old wisdom book, they said, eat, drink, and be merry under the sun. So how about that Steve? Should people do that? Just enjoy life and not really think about the grief or not?
I think that's a myth. I think any time that we run or we ignore grief, it causes us to experience something much later. What Dr. Wolfelt, a good friend of mine, Dr. Alan Wolfelt, calls grief ghosts. So if we're not paying attention to the grief and the bereavement moments that we see, they will reappear, and they will reappear stronger and more challenging to deal with.
I see. Now, another one, Steve, that may be true or false is, if you don't cry, it doesn't mean you really care or that you're really sorry about the loss. So do we all need to cry and have tears?
I was just asked that question a few weeks ago, actually. I think yes. That's interesting. I will always say tears are the words that cannot be written or the songs that cannot be heard.
That's beautifully said.
But sometimes crying doesn't fit into our personality. Mm-hmm. My father was not a crier.
Yes.
I saw him cry two times in his life. Once at my marriage, when we were coming down the aisle and he was witnessing that. And the second time was when he had his heart valve surgery. Those are the only two times I saw my father cry. No, my mother, on the other hand, and me, I cry at everything. I cry when I'm doing a funeral. I cry when I'm doing a wedding.
Wow.
It doesn't take much for me to cry.
Are you crying right now, but, Steve? Is it on the show?
I'm not crying right now, but when I open my door and see what my dogs have done, I might be crying.
Oh, you're right about that. Well, that's kind of interesting.
That's right.
And the other one, Steve, is... moving on means forgetting about the loss. So you basically put the person out of your mind and just move on. Is that true or false?
You know, that is a very, very common myth that is among us all, especially in this day and age when we're so distracted by so many different things. So I say that's a myth. I say anytime we ignore things and we don't take its course, we don't allow grief to speak to us, we don't allow grief to guide us into becoming who we are to be, and that I think we're going to see some problems happen, and we might miss out on growing up or growing through something. I'm talking with a father right now who has experienced the pain of divorce,
yes,
and his children are relatively old enough to understand, and they've seen this much more, but this is the first time that he's ever experienced anything like this up close and personal. Mm-hmm. And so his thing is, let's just move on. Let's just get through this as quickly as I can. Right. And I'm encouraging him, can we slow down? Can we just experience what's happening so that when the next time that you fall in love and you discover a person that can come close to you, that you have learned so much by the divorce and by the distraction of that divorce.
Right. Well, they said divorce is like pulling apart your flesh from another person that you've been united with. So it's very painful. Imagine you're united to someone like a Siamese twin or something, and they cut it out. So that stuff can be very painful. So
that is very, very true.
Let's talk about now how to overcome grief. Now, we have touched about it in some ways. Some people say you want to acknowledge the pain, you want to take care of yourself physically and, you know, your hobbies and interests, and also a plan for what's called grief triggers, where, you know, anniversaries and holidays, you want to be prepared for that. And some people even use social media nowadays. They actually put memorials on their pages and all that. But sometimes people can be very cruel. They said they even post negative comments about people that are dying or dead. Is that true, Steve?
Yeah, I think grief and social media really probably should not mix as much as it does, because it's always one way communicated, and you can never see the body language, the tones that you express when you're speaking on the phone or speaking, you know, face to face. So oftentimes it's a challenging thing. I have a presentation that I do when I speak, and one of them is called grief and social media.
Yes.
Just be aware.
So are there mean-spirited people that would actually attack a dead person, make jokes about it or something?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. This is very real to me, because when I had posted shortly after June 10th that it was declared by my doctor that I was cancer free.
Yes.
I have a good friend of mine who has very wonderful intentions, and she's a very special person. I enjoy her very much, and she's a good friend and so forth. But she wrote a very challenging, maybe negative comment on my social media, and basically says, Steve, you do realize that cancer is coming back.
Wow.
You do realize that cancer is once it's in you, it's always in you. It's going to show up in some other way. And my friends on social media, they attacked her. They really made that an uncomfortable situation. And I just took down the I took down the post entirely.
That's kind of sad. I guess people have their own pain, and they sometimes reflect it onto others, which is kind of a sad thing. But in terms of positive solutions, we talked about humor, Steve. We talked about finding meaning. Now, I'm curious about the role of spirituality, because I know you're a faith-based person. Now, some of our listeners are a specific faith. Some are spiritual, but not religious. Some believe in being a good person. So what's the advice you give for people in their spirituality? What role does that play in overcoming grief?
You know, in any time that I speak about spirituality, faith, and how it's expressed in grief or alongside of grief, I always encourage people to do two things. I always encourage people to journal. I have always been a journaler from when I was younger. I've not just enjoyed writing, but I've enjoyed writing and reflecting about who I am. I will also use social media to do a little bit of that. But I always ask them to journal and write down what is important to them and how they find hope, how they find resilience through difficult times. I always encourage them to think about the places that they've been, the suffering places, the grief points that they've had in their life, and what has caused them to grow as a person as a result of that. Mm-hmm. That is just as much spiritual mm-hmm. as prayer or reciting a tradition or being a part of a group ceremony or a group ritual. I talk about prayer walking. Sometimes it's just good to get out of the place that you're in, the place that seems so familiar, and get your eyes on something that is not part of your suffering. So I encourage, if people live by the beach, which is where I wish I was sometimes, I would get them to be by the ocean. Mm. Let them hear the ocean. Let them see the coming of the waves and the going out of the waves. Let them see
pray as you walk. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So I'm praying as I'm walking. I'm looking at what's going on, and I'm using those images, and I'm saying, Lord, I see the ocean coming and going. Would you help me come and go with what I need to do? Lord, I'm looking at these big trees, and I'm looking at these little trees. I want to become a big tree. I want to have a strong, solid faith. Would you help me do that? Sometimes I will walk along busy streets, and I will say, Lord, there's so many people coming and going. Would you help me slow down in my own lane? So that's what I would call faith walking or prayer walking.
That's very beautiful. Now, some people that have a faith would say, you know, they're in heaven, they're in a better place. But some other people would say, I don't believe in heaven. They're just, they're dead. You know, they're in null void. They're nothing. What do you say to people that say that to you? Like all this stuff about other better place is not really true. So they don't have the same comfortable feeling that, you know, someone that believes that.
Again, I always go back to the idea of assessing or being able to think about where that person is. I have a person who practices a total different lifestyle than I do.
Yes.
They do not have the faith values that I have. They believe in things that I believe. And so I stay within those things. And I ask them, when your grandmother passed away, what do you want to remember? And after he answered the question and we came a couple of weeks, and he called me and he said, Steve, I was just thinking about something. I want to thank you for not telling me what you believe about where my grandmother is, that you stayed where I believe. And thank you for doing that. And I said, well, you know, thank you for calling me and saying that. But, you know, I'm your friend. I'm not supposed to be shoving my faith down your throat.
I see what you're saying.
And I think that's what happens a lot with faith-based people. We kind of say, you know, things that may or may not make sense to them.
Right.
And it just may not be very good timing or very good tactfulness either.
Now, Steve, this has been really fascinating today. I mean, very enlightening, and I really appreciate, you know, you show a lot of compassion. I hear in your words that you really care about people. You have a lot of love, and, you know, this is Love University. So we often talk about extending loving energy without expectation. And suffering is one of the hardest things to deal with, you know, and death. But the idea that there are possible positives to grief, and I can think of one is that, you know, my dad died a few years ago. We were very close. And the idea that I realized I was mortal, you know, that I would die also. So people often forget this thing, you know, throughout life, you know, there's entertainment and all this other stuff people do. And then someone dies around them and then they get shocked and they said, how can this happen? But it's true that all of us will have that that happen to us. So the idea of realizing that you're living this moment and this is what you know you have and that you can really appreciate it, maybe have better relationships with loved ones, more self-confidence, that you went through the worst. What do you think about this idea that there could be positives to grief?
You know, anytime we grow through a difficult or a challenging season of time, we learn things, and that's always a positive. Anytime that we have a chance to slow it down, to make meaning out of the misunderstandings or make some clarity out of the confusion, it causes us to have better relationships. It causes us to think through our own belief systems. It causes us to reflect, to make better decisions later, and it causes our behavior to change. And anytime our behavior changes, anytime we have reflection and it causes a positive change, it's good. So whether it was hard or not almost becomes the non-negotiable. As I shared, grief is a part of normal life, and it's very necessary for us to grow up. You have, in your schooling, you had to go through some pretty treacherous waters of writing papers and coming up with research and doing didactics and all of those things in order for your degree to come into its full effect. When we're doing research, we have to ask hard questions.
Yes, definitely. Now, Steve, I have a new book that came out recently called Invincible You, Transforming Pain into Power. And one of the things I talk about is the 7% Club. They say that in history, 100 billion people have lived and died, and we currently have about 7 billion in the world. So if you're alive, that means you're about 7% of all living and dying people. So in other words, we really need to appreciate that we're alive right now. It's an amazing thing that we have this life and that we can appreciate it and we can love others and give to humanity. So I think that's an important lesson to learn, is that we have this life at the very moment. Isn't that an important thing?
That is exactly. Life is such a precious and it's so mysterious.
Yes.
And life has so much to offer us. And, you know, the fact that we are standing up or that we are this side of 6 feet under creates a wonderful avenue for change and for growth. And but some people run from those, and those who run from that are they don't take the available opportunities. But when we do, boy, we're sure gonna enjoy life more.
Yes.
And you talk to any senior citizen, and you ask them 65, 70 years old, and you ask them what was the smartest thing you did to make your life the way it is right now. They're not going to talk about their money. They're not going to talk about how many houses they had or their businesses they had or their social spectrums that they had. They're going to talk about how they learned to love, how they learned to accept who they are and accept and be comfortable within their own skin. That's the joy of love.
Exactly.
That's the joy of being able to discover who you are and working within the differences that you have.
Exactly. And, I know as a Christian, you have hope in a personal savior. Other people have hope in family or love or even leaving a legacy behind. So that word hope is a beautiful term as well, that we can transform, we can improve, we can contribute and leave something behind of great value, and that is love. And it's been wonderful having you on today, Steve. I mean, you really enlightened a lot of people here. You've been very eloquent, and we really appreciate it. And even though it's a little bit of a down topic for some people, you're giving it a very positive spin on it, that we can overcome, we can learn, we can grow from all experiences, even those that we call suffering. So, Steve, we'd love to hear more from you. Where can people get more information about the work you do?
Thank you. And it's just been a delight to be on your podcast today, and it's been a delight to share these moments with you. And I am excited about Love University and the things that you're doing as well. So thank you very much. If you're interested in things that I do, my website is www.stevensewell.me. StevenSewell.me.
Not me. That's pretty personal, huh? It's not
that's
it's
right.
Only me.
That's right. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter and on Instagram and LinkedIn. But I would love to continue the conversation and always be available for people who are caught in the middle of their grief.
And Steve, do you do coaching, speaking? Do you have books available? What do you have to help people?
Yes. So on my website, you'll see two books that I have published. One's called At a Loss, and the other one is a children's book and an activity book called Finding Hope. And then I also do personal coaching, and I speak all around the country and talking about grief and relationships, business, the ethics of grief, the ethics of business, talking a little bit about how leaders grow when grief sets in their work, different customer service experiences so that they can see how crisis and change evolve in the middle of all those things.
Yeah, that's amazing. So again, Steve, thanks for being on the show. And any listeners, if you want to write in today, maybe you have someone in your family that has died, or you're going through grief, a loss of a relationship, or a pet, or business financial reverses, or just like in life, maybe you hit a midlife and you don't know what to do now. Whatever it is that you are suffering over a loss, let us know. And also, if you have any ideas for the show, you can write us at loveuniversitylove@gmail.com. Visit us at loveuniversity.love. Like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Until next time, Love University students, this is Dr. Alex Avila. Thanks again for Steve for being on the show. We anticipate you will apply these techniques to help you live more joyfully, hopefully, and with love in your life. Regardless of what happens, sometimes there is loss, but there's always gain and there's always happiness at the end of the tunnel. Until next time, this is Dr. Alex Avila, Love University.